Before you listen to this podcast, you can subscribe to The Critic magazine with the current offer of 5 issues for just £10. Head to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk, to subscribe today.
John Major was British Prime Minister from 1990 to 1997, and I think it's fair to say that his reputation, both at the time and subsequently, was a somewhat conditional one. Whether this is fair or not is what we're going to discuss in this programme. But let's start, as it were, with the case for the prosecution, and then we can look at more positive aspects. So the case for the prosecution is a matter of both mood and content. In terms of mood, I think it's fair to say that Major suffered from coming between Margaret Thatcher and Tony Blair. For many, one might say most, but certainly many Conservatives, Margaret Thatcher, who was Prime Minister from 1979 to 1990, was a more commanding figure, somebody who had changed the political weather, somebody who had saved the country from the chaos of the 1970s and from the disorder present in the miners' strike and such like, had saved the country from the humiliation of the invasion of the Falklands in 1982, and having won one general election in 1979, had gone on to win two more conclusively. Tony Blair was somebody who, from the other side of the political spectrum, also appeared to have dominated his period in office. He again won three general elections. Again, like Thatcher, he fell, and indeed Harold Wilson in his second term, he fell without being defeated in a general election. And he was associated with many changes. I myself am less sanguine about Blair's less long-term benefit, or indeed short-term benefit to the country. But nevertheless, it is quite clear that he was a dominant figure in his period. John Major did not seem to match either of these two. First, he did not seem a dominant figure in his period. He came to power in 1990 as a result of the fall of Margaret Thatcher, a fall which left many of the parliamentary party and even more of the party in the country uneasy, if not furious. He came with, it should be said, the less than full support of the either party or indeed country, and it was widely assumed that he would be defeated in the 1992 general election. In fact, he did very well in the 1992 general election, but that, in a sense, did not rescue his reputation, no more than Theresa May's equivalent win in 2017. Incidentally, both May and Major did very well in terms of eliciting a very significant vote for the Conservatives, but each of them found it very difficult to control, dominate, or even direct the political aftermath. And although Major went on to serve a full term, whereas May did not, nevertheless, there was no real sense that he appeared to be in command of the political situation. He was perpetually vexed by opposition within the parliamentary party, and he faced significant falls in support for the Conservatives in by-elections, none of which were won during his period of office, and also in local elections. And it was widely believed prior to the 1997 general election that he was a dead man walking in political terms, and indeed that was to be what happened, and he resigned very immediately thereafter. That, of course, doesn't deal with the question of his political impact. But again, that was one in which many contemporaries were uneasy, particularly within the Conservative Party. The process of the Maastricht Agreement was one that was not, shall we say, greeted with universal favour at the time. And subsequently, it was to be held up by many conservative critics of the relationship with the European Union as a step in the wrong direction, and in particular, a step that had compromised the modus vivendi reached under Margaret Thatcher. As far as domestic policy was concerned, he was associated with, closely associated with an unsuccessful and ultimately humiliating attempt to hold Britain into the exchange rate mechanism for European currencies. And this could not be sustained. And indeed, on September the 16th, 1992, despite a rapid rise of interest rates on the day from 10%, first to 12%, then to 15%, as well as the spending of a large amount of the reserves in an attempt to prop up sterling, it all failed. And Britain left what was known as the snake, the exchange rate mechanism. There was a collapse in public confidence in the government, and Major sacrificed subsequently a close ally, Norman Lamont, who'd been Chancellor of the Exchequer, in May 1993. So I think it's fair to say that at the time, and indeed subsequently, Major's period in office was criticised quite strongly. On top of that, there was an issue of personality. The opposition was quite critical of him. They weren't in awe of him as they had been of Margaret Thatcher. And he was regarded as a grey man. He was depicted accordingly in many of the caricatures of the period, Bell in the Guardian, for example, showing him wandering around with his underpants beyond outside his trousers. And Alan Clark, very from a different political persuasion, remarking he's not at all flash and he's not classy. He doesn't even aspire to be classy. So in a sense, he got a rather, you know, harsh response. And what he was associated with, apart from what we have been talking about, was the call to return to basic values, a call made at the 1993 party conference, which was compromised by the idiosyncrasies or personal preferences of a number of Conservative MPs, which helped to produce some scandals. Interestingly enough, at the time, it was not compromised by any public knowledge that Mr. Major had been pursuing a career, or sorry, an affair, or had pursued an affair rather, with Edwina Curry, an episode which led to one of the more amusing remarks in politics. When it was disclosed, he said he was intensely embarrassed, and Edwina Curry said, well, that wasn't what he said at the time, which I personally think is very funny. Others may not share my sense of humour. Anyway, so, you know, there is a case for the prosecution. Let me try and say a few words in his defence, and then Graham and I will discuss it. Now, let's start with personality, and then we'll broaden out into policy and politics. Actually, those people who met John Major found him far from grey. They found him extremely agreeable, witty, a warm personality, somebody that took a strong interest in those with whom he was conversing, not like Mrs. Thatcher on the whole in that respect. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a long conversation with him when he was Prime Minister, and I met him again subsequently, and I can certainly say that he was a very agreeable, interested, interesting conversationalist. The same comment was made by many other people. My father-in-law, not the easiest of men under any circumstances, chaired a dinner in which Major was his guest whilst Major was prime minister, and Major was sitting next to him, obviously, and said to me subsequently what a really agreeable companion Major was. I'd never, ever heard him praise any politician. And when I made that remark, when I passed on that remark to a friend of mine who was a senior Conservative parliamentarian, he actually said, well, if everybody could have dinner with John Major, he'd win the next general election. And I said, well, politics doesn't work like that. But he, as an individual, a very agreeable man, and also in the House of Commons and with his famous standing on the soapbox, he showed that he could translate well to more public audiences. And there was no doubt at all that in the 1992 general election, which may well be recalled, not only had it been assumed that he would lose, it had been assumed in the late 1980s that Margaret Thatcher would probably lose. Nevertheless, he won. And in part, there were other factors as well. That was because it ended up as a voter preference in a kind of presidential fashion between John Major and the Labour leader, the rather egregious and certainly very verbose Neil Kinnock, and Major very much, as it were, won the public approval in that contest. So a warm man, not a man that was able to convince of the whole of the parliamentary party to support him. But then, of course, the same could have been said of Thatcher or Cameron, May, Johnson's, Truss, Sunak, or going back beforehand, certainly Heath. It's worth pointing out that when he was challenged within the Conservative Party for leadership by John Redwood, he received 218 votes. Major, in fact, rather brilliant coup, resigned as party leader in order to force a leadership election. He got 218 votes. Redwood got 89. 12 MPs spoilt their ballot, 8 abstained, and 2 failed to vote. Well, you know, one way of looking at that is shock, horror. More than 100 MPs had declined to support the Prime Minister. On the other hand, it's worth pointing out that we are very familiar with these circumstances from recent years, and it's also worth pointing out that Redwood had failed to poll the full strength of the right of the party. So, you know, those who knew him were not as disinclined to support him as in the case of some other prime ministers or party leaders we can mention over the last 60 years. And of course, he was not forced out as Margaret Thatcher had been forced out in 1990. And that is, I think, a rather instructive contrast. I mean, there are a whole host of reasons and contingencies and contextual factors that one can bring to mind, but that contrast is still arresting. As far as policy is concerned, ironically, leaving the ERM, this was not what Major wished to do, ironically turned out to be quite beneficial for the economy. And, you know, it's worth bearing in mind that there was a degree of recovery in the mid-1990s. Inflation recovered in terms of falling to 1.3% by May 1993. And interest rates were cut to 6%. The economy did reasonably well. And, you know, this kind of factor tends to be forgotten because everybody focuses on what happened in 1992. But one does have to look at the broader perspective. There's also worth thinking about some of the aspects of foreign policy. It's notable that Major formed a successful, continuing here from Thatcher, successful ally of the United States in the Gulf War of 1991. And I think it's fair to say that although he didn't benefit electorally, nor did his reputation suffer, as that of Blair was to do seriously from the second Gulf War onwards in 2003. There were issues to do with probity about Conservative MPs and their expenses and so on. There was no suggestion that the Prime Minister over foreign affairs had lied on a serious matter to the House of Commons, which was to be an issue with Tony Blair as a result of the second Gulf War. On top of that, Major played a significant role in the stabilisation of Europe after the fall of the Iron Curtain, and also in the improvement in relations with Russia, which characterise the administration of Boris Yeltsin. Again, he was not the sole figure responsible, but he played a significant role, and a role that was made more significant because of changes in some other allies and other European powers, for example, the end of the Mitterrand years in France, or conversely, in the United States, the unexpected failure of George H.W. Bush to win re-election in 1992, and his replacement by the considerably inexperienced in foreign affairs President Bill Clinton. So I think Major should receive a degree of attention from that perspective. And from that perspective, Maastricht can be seen, and I myself have doubts about the Maastricht settlement, but Maastricht can be seen as part of a broader pattern of an attempt to stabilize Europe after the Cold War. So also with the amount of time that Major devoted to trying to secure a settlement to the Bosnian crisis. War had returned to Europe, and there was not only the fact that this war was very large scale indeed, but also the danger that the crisis might grow stronger, with Russia as the sponsor of Serbia, or with just a protracted instability which might draw in other states. Now, again, Major was not solely responsible for ensuring a more benign outcome, but he played an important role within NATO. And the very fact that Britain was part of a successful turnout means that this role tends to be less related. It's worth bearing in mind, and again, the circumstances are different, that in the 1990s, first over Bosnia, and then subsequently, and this was the Tony Blair administration under Kosovo, there was a successful deterrence of Russian intervention in a way that was not to occur over Crimea under David Cameron, or subsequently over Ukraine under Boris Johnson. So the circumstances are different, but nevertheless, the contrast is an interesting one. On top of that, on the British scale, the Good Friday Agreement, which tends to be given to the credit of Tony Blair, was in fact largely John Major's work. He played an enormously important role in reducing tensions and negotiating an agreement, and was generally regarded as, in the best possible sense of the word, a safe pair of hands. And a safe pair of hands was necessary for the negotiations, complex negotiations, that were in play. So I think one can actually end up by saying that Major deserved and deserves a better, as it were, reception. Of course, he was to do extraordinarily badly In the 1997 general election, with the Conservatives losing all their seats in Scotland and Wales, Labour with 418 seats, winning a big overall majority of 179 seats. I think it's reasonable to point out that that result was due not so much to a rise in the Labour vote, but rather the Conservatives falling greatly in the numbers who voted compared to the 92 results, so that the Labour share of the vote, as opposed to the Labour number of votes, rose by 10.8% on the 92 figure. Now, in part, this was because many Conservatives didn't vote at all, while some voted for the new referendum party. And, I mean, you know, you could regard both of those as a product of the failure of John Major, but in part it was because many people were taken in by the glibness and superficiality of Tony Blair. And that meant that Conservatives didn't rally to vote to the extent that they had done when worried about Neil Kinnock, or indeed, as more recently can be seen, when Jeremy Corbyn won the last general election for the Conservatives. At any rate, Major's career as Prime Minister ended in failure. The Conservatives hadn't lost so many seats in any election since their rout by the Liberals in 1906, after which they hadn't formed a majority government again until 1922. And after the 97 general election, the Conservatives didn't form a majority government again until 2015, which again is a interesting parallel. In his, as it were, retirement, Major has been an elder statesman. He has clearly irritated a number of Conservative leaders, and indeed many Conservative supporters in the country, because of his position over the European Union. But on the whole, his interventions have been measured. Even if people haven't agreed with the content of them, the tone has been sensible. He certainly did not play with his successors the kind of destabilizing role and the irresponsible international and domestic posturing that we've come to associate with Mr. Johnson. And I think it's fair to say that not only did nothing, as it were, lead us to praise him, such as his passing, and Shakespeare, of course, polished that one up, but actually he hasn't passed. He's been somebody who has made a success of being an elder statesman who has not gone to the House of Lords, an interesting indication indeed of, in some respects, the superficiality or position of the Lords. And I suspect that in the fullness of time, and remember that although the papers from his administration, some of them have come out under the 30 years rule, not all of them have, I suspect that in the fullness of time, people will be better able to see continuities between the Thatcher and Major administrations, and also will be better able to see that in contrast to the glibness and superficiality of Blair and indeed Cameron, Major deserves to be well regarded. Over to you, Graham.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Professor Black. I'd like to leap straight in and pick up really on one of your last points there about the continuities from the Thatcher period. When he succeeded Margaret Thatcher, there was a lot of hopeful talk amongst Thatcherites that he would carry on the revolution. Margaret Thatcher herself, a bit unhelpfully, said she'd be a very good back seat driver. And by the time he lost the 97 general election, 6.5 or so years later, very few of the, what we might call the Thatcher wing of the party had any time for him at all. There's obvious reason for that, and that is his position on the European Union. But beside that, to what extent can one say he was a less flashy but nevertheless part of continuity Thatcher? And to what extent did he direct the Conservative Party and the country away from the Thatcher legacy?
Well, I think that's a brilliant question. I think the answer is both. So, for example, in the 92 election, he very much took up a Thatcher theme, which is that he wanted tax cuts, and that very much differentiated himself from Neil Kinnock. But in the mid-90s, there were two tax-raising budgets, in part due to the difficulties of circumstances. So I think, you know, there was a measure of clear continuity. There was clear continuity in the Iraq War. There was clear continuity in what I would call a semi-detached approach to Europe. And indeed, I think often I have argued this before, but I don't think anybody's paid the faintest bit of attention. I think that the stark contrasts that people do between Brexit and Remain actually underrates the extent to which British policy from the outset towards what became the European Economic Community and eventually the European Union, whether we were members or not, has always been a matter of a sort of semi-detached character. So that, I mean, you know, obviously in the debate in 2016 and subsequently, the differences were very much underlined, indeed, one might say accentuated. But it's worth bearing in mind that just as, you know, in the 1980s, Margaret Thatcher was very opposed to the Delors idea of a kind of dominant European, as she saw it, state operating through the European Commission. But she had absolutely no intention, despite thumping parliamentary majorities, and indeed a Labour opposition under Michael Foot for some of the period, which was not exactly, in terms of its leadership, enamoured of Europe. She had no intention of leaving. So the idea that there was this stark differentiation, one has to handle with caution. I think it's fair to say that there was continuity between, obviously differences in emphasis and in terms of content, between Thatcher, Major and, I would say, Brown, with his determination to keep Britain out of the euro. The joker in the pack, in many respects, was Tony Blair, who would have liked to take us into the euro. But Blair, as he showed with the Scottish issue, the Welsh issue, and so on, his support for all sorts of matters, for regional government, a referendum on regional government, Blair was a really quite thoughtless individual. He hadn't thought through the implications of a lot of things. And I think it could be argued that although they were different as personalities, and as I said, in some of their content, there was much more of a continuity between Thatcher, Major, and Brown. The other aspects, I mean, quite clearly, Major was not inclined to a corporatist conservatism. I mean, he continued with denationalisation, privatisation, most clearly in the case of the railways. We can debate and discuss the success of that, but British Rail was scarcely an advertisement for the quality of a national system, national rail system. And yeah, I would say that his critics, who didn't like him, didn't trust him, and came to the view that he'd played a role in overthrowing Margaret Thatcher, his critics wanted him out, but hadn't really thought through what should happen in his absence. I don't believe John Redwood could have won the general election in 1997. I think he would have been an extraordinarily divisive figure for the Conservative Parliamentary Party and indeed for the Conservative Party and the nation. I think the same thing is true of Ken Clark. And it can also be said that after Major went, it took very many years before the Conservatives sorted out issues of leadership, and it could be argued they've never sorted them out. So that much of the criticism thrown at Major could be regarded as not just party pre, but assuming a better alternative of which there is no sign.
Well, I want to just probe a bit further on this, you know, change in continuity, because I mean, there's one area we haven't touched on yet, but because it's no longer almost part of the debate, but it was very significant in 1990. And that is, of course, one of Thatcher's legacies, which hasn't endured, the poll tax.
Yes.
And John Major's government came up with a new system of funding local government, which is flawed in different ways, but at least solved the immediate acute political problem that the poll tax caused in British politics and for the Tory party in particular. So I think one can say he revoked that part of the Thatcher agenda, but also helped to save the Conservative Party in doing so. It's the points you make about privatisation continuing. There's also just the simple fact that over the course of John Major years in government, the share of state spending and the role of the state more generally went down to, I think it was around about 32-33%, which is unimaginably low compared to where it is now.
Oh yeah, he was a much better leader of the Conservative Party than David Cameron, and a much better leader of the nation than Tony Blair. I don't have any doubt about it. And you know, if you're looking for continuity, it's worth pointing out that in 1990, he declared, first and foremost, I loathe inflation. It's difficult to think about a remark that could have been closer to that of Thatcherite orthodoxy. As far as the poll tax was concerned, I mean, it is obviously ironic that the nation supports a poll tax. I don't think it does, actually. I think it's just the Chatterati. But it supports a poll tax in the case of the BBC licence fee. But in terms of a poll tax to do with local government, the issue by the end of 1990 appeared to be getting dangerously quite close to one of governability. And with all questions about taxation, there is ultimately a dependence on consent. After all, if lots of people refuse to pay their license fee, then the license fee would have to fold. The poll tax, nobody knows what would have happened, but there was anxiety about what it might lead to. Now, possibly that anxiety was taken too far. But it's, again, if you're looking for continuity, of the three candidates to be leader in the contest in 1990, one, of course, was John Major. The other two were Douglas Hurd and Michael Heseltine, both of whom were considerably more left-wing, or if you wish to use the pejorative term, wetter, as indeed had been Sir Anthony Mayer, who had stood against Margaret Thatcher in 1989, or for that matter, Sir Geoffrey Howe, who had helped to overthrow her in 1990. So I think it's fair to say that, you know, a lot of the people who criticised John Major didn't really think through the context of what the possible alternatives were.
And yet, there is a point of where you see a continuity where, I must be honest, I don't. And that is on European policy, particularly whether or not Britain was going to join the single currency, what became the euro. It was John Major's policy not to declare what Britain would do, whether it would join it or not, which you could say was a matter of party management, given that key big beasts in his cabinet, men like Michael Heseltine and Ken Clark, were strongly in favour of joining the euro, and others in the party were not. But it's essentially it's an untenable position as a leader to say you don't have a firm view on whether to get rid of your country's currency or not. And it was seen to be such. There was always the assumption that actually, in an ideal world with the space to do so, he was intellectually attracted to the idea of the euro. And given it would have been easier for him just to rule it out or to rule it out for the immediate future, it was instructive that he didn't do so. I think if we had joined the euro, Brexit would have been very difficult to ever achieve. So it seems to me that you paint John Major as a small s Eurosceptic, Britain attached to the European Union, but not in the inner core of it. But is that really true? Judging by his pronouncements now, where extraordinarily for a former leader of the Conservative Party, the last election he effectively hinted, if not saying outright, that people shouldn't vote Conservative, primarily on the issue of Brexit. It does strike me that actually he is his position is very far removed from where the mainstream of the Conservative Party now is.
Well, I think where it now is, yes, I think that's right. But of course, it's as I said, I go back to this point about being semi-detached. In terms of the compromises made in any one generation, what then the next generation thinks about them is very critical. Let me give you an instance. You and I know, believe in trying to deter Vladimir Putin and Russian expansionism. There will be other people who, in the years to come, from a strong conservative position, say that this was a needless intervention in European power politics, and we should have taken a sort of more detached view of it. Now, I'm not saying they're right, I happen to think they're wrong, but all I'm trying to do is to bring out the difficulty of affirming a judgment at any one moment and expecting it to last. I myself, as you know, was very, very sceptical about the euro. I'm actually very sceptical about it, not just in Britain's interests, but also in terms of interests within Europe. I think it's a flawed project. It's an attempt to impose politics on economic affairs, rather like socialism as a whole. It's a kind of corporatist matter, and I think it's been very harsh towards those economies that have not had the strengths of that of Germany. So I'm no supporter of the euro, and I think it would have had very interesting effects on British politics. I don't see how, if we joined the euro, we could have sustained the National Health Service, for example. But the point that I'm trying to make is that one must be very cautious of going from now and looking at the 1990s accordingly. And it ought to be said that the right wing of the Conservative Party then, and its major leader was John Redwood, were not people who had the competence, and one could argue the intelligence. I mean, Redwood obviously wrote a history book. He was once a fellow of All Souls, though all sorts of idiots have been fellows of All Souls. But he wrote a not bad history book. But I don't think these people were up to running the country. And in their absence, in the absence of such a group from the right, the Conservative Party was going to be led by people who were further to the left. Now, Major had the very interesting position of having won the 1990 leadership from the right of the party, but then being the head of a parliamentary party that was a broader constituency. That's not easy. And it's very simple to criticise such a person. One might argue there are parallels, there are differences, of course, in the case of Theresa May. There are differences, as I've emphasised. But what I'm trying to do is to, I'm not implying that you're taking an opposite viewpoint, but I'm trying to move away from rather simple judgments. As I started off by saying, the simple judgment on Major was that he was a total failure. I do find that a rather questionable view man who was prime minister for 7 years, after all, we've not actually had such a figure since Tony Blair, nor do we look likely to have such a figure for quite a while. So given that that's the case, I think we possibly do need a more thoughtful evaluation of him than just judging him in terms of the politics that's come to the fore around Brexit or Remain, each of which, as I've said, have flaws, not just in terms of prospectus, but also in terms of the historicism that they offer.
Well, I want to end by asking whether, in his own terms, John Major considered his term of office as a success. At the outset, he said he wanted a Britain that was at ease with itself. Do you sense that over the course of that 7 year period, not necessarily entirely for reasons connected to who the Prime Minister was, but over the course of that 6.5, almost 7 year period, that Britain became a country more governable, more at ease with itself, a more agreeable place to live?
That is a very interesting question. Well, I don't know how one would necessarily define those factors. And of course, it would depend upon where you were. I mean, Belfast is not the same as Edinburgh, is not the same as Bournemouth. So I'm not sure how quite one would go about that. I think that the failure of the left underfoot, and then, you know, Kinnock was a softer left than Foot, but nevertheless, he was still left. The failure of the left eased domestic political tensions. The defeat by Margaret Thatcher of the National Union of Miners was important. I think that the Northern Ireland situation, I mean, remember the IRA tried to kill the Prime Minister with a mortar attack on Number 10, but the Northern Ireland Irish situation was easing. And I think in international terms, as recently as 1983, there had been the serious chance that the Soviet Union would attack Western Europe. So I think that in many senses that it was easier. Now, clearly, as we know, the government's popularity after 92 was low. Major's personal popularity was low. And there was, from some people within the Conservative Party, a disinclination to support the government, and from elsewhere in politics, a wish to change it. But if you look back at 94, 95, 96, from the perspective of where we are today, and even more where we would have been if Jeremy Corbyn, who, after all, let's remember, in the 2017 election got 40% of the votes cast, even more if he'd won it, I think we see a less easy Britain and a less easy international situation and a less easy economy now. So to that extent, yes, I would say it was an easier country. May not have seemed that at the time, but I think it was.
Well, that's a very interesting point to conclude on. Professor Jeremy Black, next time we'll be talking about Tony Blair, which should be interesting. But for taking us through, John Major, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. And as I've already mentioned to listeners, they might find my A History of Britain, 1945 to Brexit, of interest. I'm afraid those people who are sympathetic to Tony Blair would be well advised not to listen next week, because I think he was even worse than David Cameron. And you know, you already know from listening to my programme on David Cameron what I think of him.
Well, there's a spoiler, but we will look forward to your assessment of Tony Blair, no less for that fact. Professor Black, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.